Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, first, I should express my deep gratitude to God for giving us this opportunity to meet here and to share good memories of love and friendship between some Shia Muslims and some Catholic Christians. And I should also thank John for his hospitality and hard work, and also all the people who have helped him. And I think our meeting tonight is one of the things that is very important for us. Also, it should be seen more often by other people who only hear sad news and bad news about conflict. The fact that we have such meeting with deep sense of not only respect or, you know, tolerance, which I think is too little, of love and brotherhood. I think these things should be more publicized, and people are in need of seeing these examples of love and solidarity. So I'm grateful to God Almighty for this meeting. I think before I start, maybe we can see just some slides, so that we have a little change, and then I can continue. So the book that is launched tonight is based on the dialogue we had in October last year in Rome and Assisi. The main sessions took place in a monastic community belonging to Boze community. And as you see, we had groups of monks from mostly Benedictine order, and some Shia from Iran and UK and Canada. Here we have Sheikh Jahangir, who is now director of Islamic College, who was with us, and also my wife. And then there are other people who are not here with us. So we had sessions in which papers were presented. Then we had lots of discussions. We had prayers together. They attended Muslim prayers. We attended office in the church. Then after we finished, we had a program in PISA, Pontifical Institute for Arabic and Islamic Studies. And the discussion there is also available in the book. We also had meeting with the Iranian ambassador to the Holy See. We had a meeting with the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. And also we had a meal in Saint Anselmo with the Abbot Primate. So I think now you have some idea about some aspects of this dialogue. But to put you a more general picture, so these are different places in Assisi that we visited. Okay, so as you know, and some of you have already heard me in Liverpool, we got involved in interfaith dialogue seriously about 18 years ago in a meeting which was organized by the Focolare movement. And that meeting was very important for us because we were in a time that we were new to this country. We were somehow missing our home and missing the spiritual atmosphere of Qom, which is a holy city. But in that meeting of the Focolare, we really felt deep sense of love for God and for humanity. And then when I asked Father Jonathan, how is it possible for me to visit a seminary, because I come from a seminary, then he suggested to visit Ampleforth. And then to make the story very, very short, my visits of Ampleforth continued. And finally, I invited, before going back to Iran in 2001, Abbot Timothy Wright and Father Woolston to visit us in Qom. And in Qom, they gave lectures, And we planned for the first Catholic Shia dialogue to take place in July 2003 in UK. One day in London at Heathrow College, and then 4 days at Ampleforth. And that was very good experience. And it was considered by the Tablet as the first major British encounter of the Catholic theologians with the Iranian Shiite thinkers and theologians. And we published the year after this book. Of course, this is the second edition, but the first edition was the hardback. So we published this, Catholics and Shia in Dialogue, Studies in Theology and Spirituality, which involves about 25 papers from Catholic side and Shia side. And then 2004, we had another visit of Catholics of Iran. They came to Iran, four of them, two from the Heathrow College and two from Ampleforth. And then we planned for the second dialogue, and that took place in 2005, again in Heathrow and Ampleforth, on a very important issue, and that was reason and faith. So we talked about reason and faith in theory and practice, and the book was published the year after, 2006. And then we had the next dialogue in Worth Abbey, because Abbot Timothy no longer was the abbot of Ampleforth, so we had it in Heathrow and Worth Abbey in 2007 on ethics in today's society, and we talked about ethics in general, and then we focused on bioethics, environmental ethics, and on business ethics. And then for some time we didn't have dialogue because Abbot Timothy moved to Rome, and then when I took a group of students from Qom to Rome, we planned for the fourth round of dialogue to take place in Rome. So we had it in Sant Anselmo, and that was the first round of dialogue in which monastic interfaith dialogue was involved. Therefore, the first volume after that dialogue is called Monks and Muslims One, and that was about prayer and scripture. Then we had the next one, which is the fifth in Qom, and that was on friendship, creating communities of friendship. And then the last one, which was October last year, was in Assisi on community, which is Monks and Muslims 3, towards a global community of Abraham. Each of these books and dialogues come with lots of stories and lots of good memories and lots of lessons that we have learned. So maybe sometime we need to just sit and write down. But thanks to God, at least we managed to document part of our experiences in these six volumes, and they are available for everyone to benefit. But in addition to having these rounds of dialogue and always taking new people with us, and also many times we took also some of our students with us, we try to pass on this culture of dialogue to other people. And thanks to God, my wife and I took several groups of ladies from Seminary of Qom to different places for Christianity. So we took a group of ladies to Italy, and we had very good program with the Focolare in Castel Gandolfo and Lopiano. And last February, March, we took another group, and they stayed in Lopiano for 1 month. And it was a deeper experience of the spirituality of the Focolare and a little experience of the formation. We also have taken groups to Mennonite Christians who are Anabaptists in North America, in US, in Canada. So we have been also trying to pass on this experience to other people. Also, thanks to God, several years ago, the Seminary of Qom established a very important institute for training people who could be involved in building bridges and interfaith activities, which is the International Institute for Islamic Studies. And now our students are very much involved in this interfaith dialogue. So this is a little bit history and the latest development. I would like to talk a little bit about the topic of the book, which is community, and then share with you some reflections. Why we chose the topic of community? You know, the selection of topic for dialogue is very important issue. It's a very delicate issue. But we didn't just have academic interest, although we had academic, but it was not just academic interest. We always try to talk about issues which are common, you know, challenges for us, and you know, they have common interest from both sides. And in particular, I have been very much thinking in the last couple of years about the issue of community, because I have been very much convinced that to be a believer is not something that you can do it on your own. As individuals, I think there is a limit that you can progress. And a great part of success comes for a person in his journey towards God when he can approach God as a member of a community. So I've been thinking about this topic a lot. And I think one of the important things that we actually need today for our own benefit and also to share with people who search about the religions and about the beauty of the faith is to give them real examples of community of the faithful. The people who not in their personal relation with God, they try to be pious, but the person that in addition to that try to be instruments and channels for God's mercy to other people. Because a great test comes here. To be able to be pious in your personal relation with God is not easy, but it's manageable by most of people. But I think to be able to be a good also member of community who sacrifice his or her comfort and convenience for the sake of good of the community and feel that your relation with God can only come when you have good relation with other people, I think this is something which is not very easy and something that we many times find missing. Many people think that just they can find a shortcut and go fast to God by forgetting other people. They try not to annoy other people, not to hurt other people, but they think they just can focus on moving towards God, forgetting the people who are around. But this is not, I think, the way it works. We have a hadith, a narration in many sources that God asked Moses, "Oh Moses, what have you done for me?" And Moses said, "I have prayed for you. I have fasted for you. I've given alms for you." Then according to this narration, God said, "Your fasting, your prayer, your alms were all good for yourself. They helped you in dunya and in this world and the hereafter. What have you done for me?" So Moses had no answer. So he said, "Dullani ala al-amal alladhi huwa lak." Please tell me, what is the action which is for you? What is that thing that you consider for yourself? Then God said, "Halwa layta li waliyan." Have you ever taken a person as your friend, as your intimate brother because of me? This is what I can accept to be for me. Other things is for your own interest. Some people have interest in money, but religious people have interest in reward or other things. But if you want to really see that you have been doing things for me, see, have you ever chosen a person who has no relation with you? Is not your family member, is not even speaking your language, is not the same, you know, race or ethnicity, but just because of me, you have been able to choose that person as your brother or sister in faith. So, this is the challenge. We have a hadith from Prophet Muhammad in which he is quoted as asking his companions, which handhold of the faith is the firmest? The firmest handhold of the faith, because in Quran we have this concept of urwatul wuthqa, the firmest handhold. So the companions of the Prophet gave different answers. Some said prayer, some said, you know, fasting, some said zakat, some said jihad, different things. But Rasulullah didn't accept any of these answers. And then when they were left without any answer, they asked the Prophet, you know, to give the answer himself. So the Prophet said, to love for the sake of God. This is the firmest handhold of the faith. So this is the challenge. How we are able to love for the sake of God, not just to love God. To love God is easy, but to love for the sake of God and to love everything which is related to God and everyone who is created by God, this is the challenge. So I have been thinking about this issue and then how we can build a community of the faithful who can overcome all the differences and be really united for the sake of God and under the love for God. So I thought a great opportunity is to have our dialogue with our Catholic friends on this issue. We have experiences, they have experiences, and we can always learn from each other. Because I think something that some people don't get it right is that they think if you believe in your faith as, I don't know, complete or full presentation or embodiment of truth, it means that you don't need to learn from people of other faith, which is a misconception. I can believe that the Quran is full truth, but I as a Muslim can be ignorant. I can learn from other people. Our Prophet had not only put any limit on learning, actually he encouraged Muslims to go even up to China for learning wisdom. And you know, people in China in that time, they were not Muslims or they were not even, you know, Christians. They were not maybe believers in any Abrahamic faith. We have no limit for learning. So why I should feel bad if I want to learn from my Christian friends their experiences? Why they should feel bad if they want to learn from their Muslim brothers about their experiences? I think if we really work together and think together, then God will gift us with the things that we have so far not been able to understand. There's a limit in our understanding. And if we want to reduce this limit, I think we should show our real thirst for knowing by coming together. The fact that you humble yourself to ask other people for their opinion, for their advice, for their experiences, shows that you are really thirsty for knowledge, and then God would gift you with the knowledge. So I said to my Christian friends, let's have our dialogue on this issue of community. Of course, community may mean different things, but if we come together and think together, maybe we can understand better. So thanks to God, we had papers, we had discussions, but I think this is a kind of issue which takes time. I think it's the most difficult task to build a community. To train individuals is difficult, but still possible. But to build a community that from every aspect fulfills the requirements of being godly, it's not easy. And I hope that we would be able to experience having this community, not only of Muslims, but of all believers in God. And this is why we thought we should make a special reference to Abraham. Because Abraham is a special character. He's a father, he's a champion of servitude to God, to the truth. And he is the person who can bring all of us together. In a paper that I have in the book, I said, how we can restore the house of Abraham. I think, unfortunately, today, house of Abraham is broken into Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and then each of them, different sects, different denominations. How we can restore the house of Abraham? Not by forgetting the differences, but by accepting that there is so much that we share that we can live peacefully in one house, which is house of God, and headed by the father of the family, who is Abraham. So we call this towards a community, global community of Abraham. And I think Abraham is a person that we all owe a lot to him. All the prophets, whether for Muslim, whether for Jews, whether for Christians, come from that lineage of Abraham. And finally, if I may have a few minutes, just a little thought to share with you, and I think you are all people who are interested in dialogue and interfaith, and this is why you are here. So maybe nothing new for you, but just as the Quran says, وَذَكِّرْ إِنَّ الذِّكْرَ تَنْفَعُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. Reminder can benefit always the believers. So we are just reminding ourselves of some of the things that we all know. I was thinking about this issue of unity and how we can come up with a comprehensive understanding of unity. Unfortunately, most of the time, when we theologically or even spiritually we talk about unity of God, I think we somehow stop in the middle of the way. We don't really go up to the end of the journey to come up with all the implications of unity of God. As far as we understand from the Quran and from the teachings of the Prophet, unity of God is something that can shape all aspects of our life. To believe in God, the One, is not just a dogma of theology. It's not something that you just consider it in your acts of worship. It's the orientation that you should have in your life. You know, we have this saying that the Prophet used to say to the people of Mecca, قُولُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ تُفْلِحُ. Say, there is no God but one God, and you will be happy in this world and the hereafter. What does it mean to say? Is it just verbally saying that there is no God what except the one God? No, it means that to commit yourself, that there is only one source of truth. There is only one source of beauty, one source of goodness. And then you have to devote your energy, your skills, your talents to go and take everyone with you towards that source. This is unity. So it's not just theology. It's something which is about your practical way of life. So for me, I think it's a sign of being a good believer if you are able to bring people together. If you can make husbands and wives closer to each other, if you can make brothers and sisters closer to each other, if you can make parents and children closer, neighbors closer, if you can make Muslims, Sunni, Shia, or I don't know, Christians, Catholics, Protestants, together, if you bring Muslims and Christians together, this is the sign that you are moving in right direction. But if you are adding to the differences, the Quran says this is what Pharaoh was doing. This is a satanic act that you divide people. And many times, unfortunately, we divide people and we give the name of religion to it. We think that we are serving our, you know, religion, we are serving God, but this is misconception. So anyone, by looking behind and what he or she has done in his preachings, in his teachings, in his life, and seeing whether she has been or he has been a voice of unity or not, can check, am I moving the right direction or not? And this brings great responsibility to the leaders, to the people who are following. If they are really working for the sake of God, they should be able to have a godly vision. They should be able to see all people as children of God. You can have different children. Some of your children might be better than others. Some of your children might be healthy. Some of them may have disabilities. But as a father, as a person who wants to serve the family, you want good for everyone. You cannot boycott some of the family. You cannot fight against some of the family. You just try to bring the family together. And in this process, even if you are to be forgotten, if you are to be disappearing, it's not important. The main thing is the unity of the family, the unity of the children of God. So I think this is a very important aspect of unity of God that we need to reflect on. And the last point is, I was speaking with some of friends who are here. You know, we had a meeting a few weeks ago in London Interfaith Center about the role of faith in a secular society. And in that meeting, I mentioned the point that I want to share, and I would be happy to receive your comments. I said, it seems to me, I am not a person who can prophesy. I am a very ordinary person. But it just seems to me that we are experiencing a shift in paradigm. So far, world religions have been doing well on their own. So far, Islam didn't need to work with Christianity to reach to the point that has reached. Christianity didn't need to work with Islam to reach the point that it has reached. So they have been doing well on their own. Even sometimes they had difficulties in some places. They had difficulty with each other. Still in some parts of the world, maybe Muslims look at Christians as their rivals. Maybe Christians look at Muslims as their, you know, troublemakers. But they have been generally doing well on their own. But my understanding is that the world has changed. With the pressure which is coming from secularism, with the pressure which is coming from liberalism, there is no way for religious people to be able to do well on their own. Muslims and Christians and Jews and all who have faith in God, and on another level, all people who believe in fundamental values that we share, they should know that future is only there for us if we are together. No way for, I don't think any single religion can be able to face all the challenges and protect the people who adhere to that faith if we don't cooperate with each other. There is a great pressure coming from the waves of materialism affecting our family, affecting our children, affecting even our, you know, old people. We have so many different types of problems. If we want to be successful, we have to work together. And I think then we would have two groups of people who would not like to see us working together. One is the people whose agenda, as Archbishop said, is to say that religion is the source of all problems. Especially all the conflicts, all the wars are caused by religious people. If you want a world free from problems, you should forget religion. So these people don't like to see Muslims and Christians and Jews being together and working together and have beautiful united testimony of faith. They want us to fight each other, and then they can use this as excuse. And the other challenge would come from the short-sighted people in each of our traditions. They also don't like us to be together. They feel that this is a threat. They feel this is a dilution in faith if you can be close to people of other faiths and work together. So we have to be determined to work for the unity and face these challenges that would be coming from these two opposite directions. I thank you very much, and I pray to God Almighty to keep all of you blessed and inspired by His wisdom. Thank you very much.